this is because of such a person says, because, and a chairperson for public accounts committee, the Department of Justice. I know that the other person that we have accepted from them attendance, but these people that have been targeted and identified, are those that are identified. It's one of the meetings that will take the whole day. So we will allocate the whole day for the 25th. And also, it's a joint meeting between National Assembly and NCOP. So we will be seated with the chairperson. This is the core coordinator to the chairperson of Public Safety and Administration. It's a long committee in NCOP of Public Safety and Administration. It will be quartered. That's what I'm trying to say, National Assembly plus NCOP. Because most of the reports that come from NCOP, some of them got outcomes of provincial issues that they actually perform. So it will be a beginning of a working relationship with the new oversight, moving to where the elected chair, the cause of the police have been said, moving where the staff of members in terms of priority. The 1st September, it will be a draft meeting, in a sense that we will be discussing the patient by the safety commission for the police speaker. And on that a discussion, why to come to that, because many other committees affected by the speaker. They work with speaker and the one or the other they've already been. They need to meet so that we don't have many meetings. All the committees where speaker work with them will be part of the speaker together with our committees. We therefore could have the cluster, but not the governance cluster, it's our focus, but cluster that relates to the activity of that is the 1st of September. On the 8th then, we are going to have, as you know, that is also consistently have, okay, I just left the Palama on the 1st. I left the Palama one. But then also, okay, there will be also Palama as indicated on the second item on the cluster. Plus it as well. We'll be considering the oversight report. That's what I was battling with. Why do they come together? But there was an oversight report that you will be considering on the very same day. On the 8th of September, we will then have a PCTA meeting where we also have the Department of Education. It's our minister together with the Minister for Education, because the PCTA has been a thorny issue for this committee, and as a result, that matter is going to be addressed that way. Leading then to the week of course, on the day of the PCTA, there will also be Palama, because we thought it's best to bring Palama on board on that day while education is also there. And as we know, Palama, with its mandate and task, it will be best to have a coordination of activities or some discussion started at that level, so that there's collaboration of institutions. And then the very last item indicated prior to the constituency period of the 23rd to the 8th. The last one is during the week of the 13th to the 17th of September, where the committee will be embarking on a workshop of the BBBB, BBBR workshop, so that we will detail and work on all the items and issues that we pull out, we want to submit or resubmit, and therefore we have to thoroughly discuss that matter, the approach, and how we're going to handle it as the committee, and then embark on that kind of a workshop, so that when we do a proposal and a submission, we are all in understanding in terms of what we wanted to do.
What does BBRRR stand for?
It's budgetary. Can you tell
us? The budgetary recommendation report, review and recommendation report that
all the committees are obligated to submit to the Standing Committee on Finance for when they consider the medium-term budget policy statement during the beginning of fourth term.
Okay, maybe just to also clarify, we did have that kind of a workshop here in Parliament where they were, you know, it's a new thing for the committees. It's in line with the budget. It allows us to do some amendments and some submissions if there's a need to do that. There was a workshop that was conducted for all of us in Parliament of the BBBR, you know, where we're taken through what is it, what does it mean. We therefore, you know, it took something like 3 weeks
all committees did attend and all members were part of it. So it was thoroughly explaining. I might not be having the potential to explain it the same way as the workshop, but it relates to the issues of budget. Okay. Honourable members, what I was trying to do is to outline, but I think then this is the tasks that are facing us. We will have some time to discuss our this work, because some of the things which are very key falls into the very last term, and it should be per consensus. We should agree that, okay, these things, because they're key, we put them there and we're able to make time for them or discuss them on time. You know, issues such as the Palama issue is very major. Issues such as the anti-corruption are very major. So we cannot touch them, touch and move. We need to do a thorough job when we deal with all those issues. It's just the two of them that I recall at this point in time, because all the things emanate from our work, things that we pick up, things that we think they should be further focused. But what is becoming key, we have been able to touch one key issue, which is the Public Service Commission's, our relation with the public, how we're going to work, and the research institute, the research capacity of the institution that deals with oversight, the Parliament. So we can, in the coming meeting, set aside maybe some 20 minutes to just talk about this matter in the coming meeting, because this one looks like it's going to be tight today. But basically, members, I just needed to just take you through this one, and coming back then to the business of the day, there are some apologies as well that have been sent.
Madam Chair, just on the program.
Yes.
Can I just ask, why we approve programs ahead of time? We said at the beginning of a term, usually for the next term, and sometimes even for two terms ahead, and then we change it at the last minute. It really, we can't plan properly, and it throws us completely out of kilter. When we have these short-term notices, meetings been changed, meetings been cancelled, we're not discussing this, we're not discussing something else, and then we get a report on an important matter on the morning as we arrive here, and so on. Why do these programs keep on changing? Does it help when you send out notices like this, and we approve of it, and then it's changed in the morning before a meeting?
The program of the committee, it's a responsibility of all of us through the workshops that we conduct. We had workshops that we had, and we outlined what are the things that we need to do for the year. There will be some changes when Parliament changes its program. For instance, if we're supposed to sit and they say it's a sitting of the House, we cannot continue to do that. In terms of the program, it's very difficult to get absolute stability, but we are able to accommodate. We can't move outside what we've agreed with members. We will always remain within what we've agreed. But the fact of the matter, there will be some changes here and there in terms of time and other things. For instance, we had a longer program, which when we clarified about the time in Parliament, we could not accommodate it as it was. In terms of this one, it's difficult to get stability, but it will be within the agreement of the overall workshop. There will be nothing new, nothing completely out of what we discussed. It will go within that, and definitely it won't. Even this one, we think that is the ultimate outline, but it can happen that one of them changes. So unfortunately with this one, it is not within our control, it's the control of Parliament. And Parliament does change programs, you all know that. They do change. So the change affects everything else. It affects committees. It affects many other kind of work. And we're doing our best to stick within what we've agreed to do. I think when we were talking about these ones of reports, I'm not very sure which report the member is talking about. If the member is referring to the report on Indonesia, is it the Indonesia one? The Ghana and Indonesia. The Ghana and Indonesia reports are the first drafts which members are going to go have enough time to go through those reports. It's not something that we're going, yes, I know what were the things. They submitted the report late into pigeonholes. I'm sure some of you called them this morning. But it's not something that we're going to discuss in detail. We haven't agreed on the format. We need to go and look at it. you know, you need enough time to do that, and then we'll come back. That is the report I know that was submitted this morning. And I cannot account for institutions that are outside Parliament. I can only account for the work of Parliament in terms of the committee work. And we're doing our best to stabilize the program, and we've been trying our level best, our utmost best. And if they change, for instance, we can say we go 3 days workshop. When Parliament comes and cuts 1 day, I can't come back and say, can I call all of you? They've cut it 1 day. I have to work within what is there, and we come and put it before us. And I would really request that if members have very serious problems, can you put them in writing so that we're able to sort of respond, because I might not be clear about the kind of complaint maybe as we're raising it. But so far, we have been doing our best to stick to the program. We've been doing our best to remain within what Parliament gives us. And we've been shuffled as well around. We've been having our own stresses in terms of getting committee days and so on. Can I be allowed maybe to go through apologies first so that we are starting the meeting, because things are thrown while we are still on other agenda. I will take your hand, Honorable Van Schalkwyk, immediately, and yourself as well. I'll come back to them. Okay. In terms of the other documents that we have, before I come to apologies, we've got a draft program. We've got the draft study tour report, which focuses on the Ghana study tour, on the Indonesia study tour. Of course, we do have, I'm sure members have noticed, draft minutes of the 2nd June meeting. We've got presentation by DPSA, which we found this morning, which we just got this morning. We'll come back to that matter when we discuss with DPSA. We've got documents received from POPCO during the constituency period. Okay, it's just for reference. It's just a point of reference. We're not going to make any discussion on that matter. But I think the documents that we're going to refer to, it will be the minutes. It will be the draft report. After this, we'll just talk about it, as I indicated, of course, because I was compelled to actually explain based on members getting the draft late. So that's what is going to happen. These are the reports that we have. Now I'm coming to apologies, and I'll come to the issues that you want to raise, members. On the apologies, we do have the apology from the minister. We got the apology. We know that they are busy in cabinet today, and there are some days that will be available, of course, but today is one of the bad days, so the minister cannot be available. We do as well have, that is Minister Baloyi. We do also have the apology from the deputy minister, which is Deputy Minister Parayaki, who also cannot be available today, and they have sent people to attend to the matters that we raised. We have an apology again from Honorable Williams. They sit, they're in two committees. The other committee, it has major issues to consider. He then had to go to that committee. I'm sure there's also another member, which is Bushiru, but I didn't see, but she did talk to me. I don't see the apology, but she did really. I've got the apology from Honorable Bushiku as well. They're in the same committee of COPTA. So those are the apologies. And then before the presentation, let me start with Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say something about the functioning of the order, shall I say, the effective functioning of the committee. And I specifically want to refer to the oversight visit on the 3rd and the 4th of August. That was not on the program. And, you know, on Monday afternoon, the 2nd of August, at 3 o'clock, I got a call from Parliament to ask me whether I am going to, whether I'm joining the committee, because they're flying to Johannesburg later that afternoon. It was Monday, and I was in my constituency, which is 400 kilometers from Cape Town. I didn't have any notice of an oversight tour to Palama. In other words, I didn't know anything about it. And then, well, I don't know at what time the plane left, But at 10 to 3, I got this call from Parliament to ask me whether I am going to join the committee to Pretoria. Now, if I was a very sensitive person, I could have thought that the committee doesn't want me there. But I'm not really that sensitive. It's just a matter of professionalism. You know, why didn't, I suppose all the other members knew about it, but why didn't I get notice of the oversight report? And then I want to say quickly something about the reports and the agendas. We sometimes get it on Tuesday and on Wednesday. We've got a meeting. You know, we all have busy schedules, and we don't really have proper enough time to prepare ourselves properly for the meeting the next. So can I please ask whether that, can't we get the documents, say, on the Thursday of the previous week? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, before we go to your question, remember, I think the issues that you're raising, Honourable Francis, are very genuine and quite fair. They need to be attended to. The issue of the oversight, for instance. I think the oversight, members should recall that there was a time where we prepared for an oversight. We were going to do oversight. And then it then stopped. Because Parliament said no committee can go on oversight. They just stopped us. And we were ready, we communicated, you know, and then just when we were just about to go, then they stopped us. They said, no, committees must sit, you can't go on oversight. Those are some of the things I talk about when I say, sometimes also look into how Parliament arranges its things. So when we are embarking on our study tour to Ghana and to Indonesia, we then realized on the government, on the Parliament program, I'm sure all of you heard, that it's also time for oversight during the same period. We therefore, before we left, had to prepare for oversight. And there are processes, unfortunately, in Parliament where you prepare, you submit, you request, they approve. We left all other things. We have left the arrangements and all other things. They were in the process of being approved because also had to do oversight. Was that's the only time for oversight. And then we left. So what we realized, yes, we had that, you know, there's no other time that we would ever had. That was the only time. We hear all the issues like the one that you're raising. We had many other things that came to my attention in terms of people being informed late, you know, and, you know, other people, I don't know about other things. But there are so many other things that members raised which we are able to actually clear. That's why it's very fair. It will only be fair for me to also clear your issue because, actually, the late indication to you to go was uncalled for, was unnecessary. It's something that I'm actually fighting with Parliament in terms of they did us bad in terms of the arrangement for that oversight. In fact, it was by luck that we managed to go there because even the timing were pressed up and all other stuff, where we had to come back from a trip and do it. It was such a compromise, which I appreciate from members who did it. It's very much, I mean, you can't come from a trip, you know, before you even, you know, you're embarking on it. But there are members who are able to sort of sacrifice to that extent, which I appreciate definitely. But it's understood that sometimes it may not be possible. But with yourself, you are around. There's no reason. In fact, it's one meeting that I'm having with the management that runs some committees. Because it's not only that thing, the things that I can all bring to the committee that also happened, which in this case, I'll actually, let me say, after this meeting with them, I'll come and give you feedback. Sometimes it's difficult for us to work within this system. For an example, the staff that Parliament has given to work with me, they don't only account to me. They account to me on the work of the committee. But they also account to other managers in terms of the parliamentary work. So they're on me, they're on some other person. Sometimes they also find things very difficult, but I know that the committee did its best on time. There's proof. Everything was arranged on time. The only problem is that when things were supposed to be processed, it never happened on time, and honestly speaking, from the side of the officials that worked with me, everything was done appropriately. It's unfortunate that there was that problem, and it's the side of the parliament. We'll come back and give you feedback as soon as we had this meeting that is going to take place this afternoon. Okay, sorry. I already had a hand. Malula?
Chairperson, I wanted to say our program most is depending on other committees, and then it won't be our fault if those committees have their emergencies or anything. The thing that we want to thank is that we have received a message in time that the meeting is cancelled. Rather than coming to the meeting, find the meeting is cancelled. What we need to thank is that information, it goes well for us to know what to do next besides the cancellation of that meeting. And the other one is that the issue is not on DA only. Even Mohalo was not part of the oversight, because she also found the phone on Monday, the same day we were in that oversight. And all of us, we found the communication late, but because we are soldiers, we managed to go to the oversight. So that one is not for, even Razia was frustrated because she left this arrangement with other staff and she was in Ghana. When she comes back, she found there's nothing happening. So I thank you, Chair, by being straight and forward, apologizing for those issues and go back to the staff and report back to the members. But we need to be focused because the oversight plan was there in the program. The issue is just the staff that did not arrange the trip well. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe quite fairly, honorable members, those are genuine concerns, and that's why we have to address them. And thanks for those who really understand the difficulties that you undergo. Just like yourself, Honorable Franskalke, you are saying you think that you are hated, but because you are not sensitive, you don't. We really are. Honorable Traya?
Madam Chair, yes, on that same point. You know, the way I heard about the meeting was via somebody else while we were in Indonesia. I didn't have direct communication from our committee or our committee secretary. I got a communication from our committee secretary to the other committee secretary via other members of the committee who were on the same tour as I was. So it was really in a roundabout way. And I don't regard that as official communication at all. So I thought maybe when I get back home, there will be a notice in my email or in my pigeonhole or somewhere to show that there was an official. But there was nothing. So as far as I'm concerned, up to this point, there was no official notification of this meeting, of this oversight visit. So this oversight visit didn't happen. Officially, it didn't happen. Whatever it was just an informal gathering of maybe some members who like to go and see how Paloma was offering, and they were kind enough to host you, but it was not an official oversight visit by members of this portfolio committee. To this day, there's never been an official communication, official notification in any means, via SMS, via email, well, whether a document in our pigeonholes about this visit. And this, we can't function like this. It's not official, and it's not recognized. We're not soldiers. We are members of parliament. We're in a constituted democracy, functioning according to a constitution, and we have to actually behave accordingly. This is very serious, Madam Chair.
Honorable Dreyer, I was very much aware that you are not going to be on the oversight talk. I was in Ghana myself as well, as a committee. I knew from when we were still in Indonesia that you are not going to go to the oversight, and we couldn't force you to do the oversight. It was up to you to decide. And if you think that it was informal, you are very wrong. That was a formal. Parliament had oversight on its schedule, and we did exactly what was supposed to do according to oversight. We know that, of course, as an opposition, we always oppose things that we do, and we don't mind. That's your task. But the fact of the matter, we will proceed to work. We will proceed to do things that will change the lives of the people in this country. You knew you were better than the rest. You knew on time. If it was a committee secretary for another committee, who you knew. So that committee secretary was on an official trip with yourselves. It was difficult for me to communicate with yourselves when we were in Indonesia. It was very complicated and difficult. It's not our problem. if there was no proper communication.
It is
not a problem.
No,
I'm still on the floor. I'm still talking. I said I'm going to have a meeting with the parliament managers on this matter. I will come back and inform you. We also have our own frustration on these issues, and therefore we cannot entertain an individual issue. If you felt that you are throwing tantrums, but please don't impact on the work of the committee. This was an official trip. It was a schedule that is was designed by Parliament. If you look at your program, not the one that is designed by me, it's written oversight. I don't have a problem for you to oppose, but we'll proceed, all of us want to do the Parliament's work, to do the work. And also, if there is a problem with the administration of Parliament, I said I'm having a meeting with Parliament. I will come and give feedback. But that, you can write off the work that we're doing so hard. We apologize. We can't entertain that. Can members, can we proceed with the meeting? Okay. Coming to the next item now. Today, we were going to have an update of the Public Service Administration on the progress regarding its strategy priorities for 2010. Just to recap on this issue, remember we did have this meeting before, and it's therefore important for the committee to keep an update. And therefore, what we're going to do, we need to find out, because we don't want to come at the last minute and say, why didn't you do? We want to hear, how far are you? Because some of them were getting refined, and some of them were in the process of being clarified, but we know now it's in, and we're expecting that presentation to guide us as this committee. And then we'll also do the consideration of the draft report on the joint study tour to Ghana and Indonesia. As I already indicated, just consideration. It's not dealing with the report, because the last draft was issued yesterday afternoon. And therefore, I'm coming back to the issue of the presentation by DPSA. DPSA, we did have a fight last time because we didn't bring the presentation on time. And this happens again. I can't keep fighting. Can I get a reason why to get the documents this morning? Are you aware? I'm sure you're aware that if documents come, they create this kind of you know, what you've just experienced earlier on. And we had a fight. We can't keep fighting. We just need to find out what happened. Why are we getting the documents today, when we are sitting today? Can you have the one who's leading the delegation to introduce the delegation and indicate to us what's the problem?
Good morning, Madam Chair and honorable members. My name is Kenny Govender, the acting DG in DPSA. I'll be leading the delegation. Together with me is Linda Shangi. She's the head of the program management office. Then we have Mr. Diamond Mashwane, who is the Chief Operating Officer in the department, and Kubean Govender from the Deputy Minister's Office. Honorable Chair, it's difficult to start a meeting with an apology, and I acknowledge that. It's a failing on the part of DPSA in not submitting the documents in time. The main reason being, one, we've been busy trying to coordinate the delivery agreement and the coordination between the delivery agreement in relation to the outcomes approach and the alignment of the strategic plan of the department and the operational plan of the department, and that's the delay. In fact, we were hoping today to also supply you with the strategic plan, with the revised strategic plan and the revised operational plan, to ensure there's a complete set of documentation before the portfolio committee considering the next 4 years going forward. And that has been a delay from the governance and administration perspective, together with the presidency and ourselves in finalizing. So the delay is from our side, Madam Chair, and we will ensure that that does not happen. I'm aware of the rules of the committee to make sure documentation reaches you 7 days in advance. We're going to try going forward to ensure that we meet those deadlines.
Like I indicated, we once had a fight on this issue. I really don't want us to repeat that. We are doing us badly because once the document comes in the morning, we can't read. And most people out there, they believe that members of parliament are ignorant. They don't read. They don't ask appropriate questions. It's precisely because of things like this we don't appreciate it at all. Can then go to a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, our apologies, and it will not happen again. The presentation today is going to look at the background where we are at the moment, and we're going to get into much detail around the actual activities for 2010, 2011, as well as the progress in relation to all of those for the first two quarters of the financial year. In 2010, government adopted the outcomes-based approach, which will guide the implementation of the strategic priorities for both 2010 and leading up to 2014. This approach is concentrating on a few priorities and activities that will steer the country in a particular direction. Linked to that particular process, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, the focus is then translated into 12 outcomes that have been adopted as part of this outcomes-based approach. It includes education, health, economic development, safety and security, and the Minister for Public Service and Administration has been allocated the responsibility to coordinate the implementation, including monitoring and reporting, in relation to Outcome 12. And this particular Outcome 12 is linked to all of the other 11 outcomes. So in other words, we need to ensure that Outcome 12 is effectively and efficiently implemented to ensure that education delivers in terms of their outcome, health delivers in terms of their outcome, or safety and security. Because we play a central role in supporting department on a range of matters, and I will speak to those particular outcomes in terms of how we support them. Outcome 12 itself, which deals with the effective, efficient, development-oriented public service, as well as an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. The outcome itself has been divided into two parts. Part A, which is looking at the public service in particular, which is the efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, and the responsibility of that is the Minister for Public Service and Administration, together with a range of other ministers. And Part B, which deals with an empowered and inclusive citizenship, will be the responsibility or led by the Minister for Arts and Culture. And the Minister for Public Service and Administration will play a role in that. The view is held that both these Part A and Part B and the Minister for Arts and Culture, the Minister for Public Service and Administration, will still report through this committee in relation to the deliverables linked to those delivery agreements. Leading from that process, which we've been engaged in for the past couple of months, the DPSA's 2010-2014 strategic plan and operational plan for the specific year, 2010-2011, has taken note of all of those issues and the consideration of the department's response to its mandates, both in terms of the Constitution, as well as the Minister's Performance Agreement that was signed between the President and the Minister, as well as the Outcome 12 and its related outputs. Madam Chair, I want to also indicate that as part of those, the development of Outcome 12 and its related outputs took into account the discussion or the debates between the President and to get in his meeting with the senior public servants that was held on the 23rd of April, where a number of concerns were raised and dealt with. In summary, the priorities for the strategic term, that's the 4 years before us, we're going to look at the following 11 key areas. Review the performance management system to ensure accountability for public officials. Review of discipline management in the public service. Review of our recruitment practices. Improve turnaround times in assessing government services. Shorten the time it takes to fill vacancies. Deepen the fight against corruption in the public service. Interrogate the public sector integrity framework with a view to eliminate conflict of interest by public officials, broaden the culture of e-governance, strengthen citizen engagement in government programs, intensify capacity development of officials through the introduction of cadre development programs, and give a new practical meaning to the implementation of ATAPILE programs. These priorities will be implemented under the department's 7 strategic outputs. What is very important in relation to the new outcomes-based approach and outputs is that we need to set clearly defined strategic measurable indicators all along the way. So each of the outputs will have defined indicators per year, deliverables and measurable targets in each of the year to ensure we achieve the outcome at the end of the four-year period. Listed on this slide are the 7 strategic outputs that DPSA has identified. Outputs 1, 2, 3, and 4 are closely aligned to the governance and administration outputs in terms of the 4 broad outputs there. 5, 6, and 7 are specific to DPSA in a sense, although we do work closely with other partners. You'll notice also, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, that in at the right-hand side column, we put DPSA as the lead, but many of these outputs can only be achieved in partnership with other departments. So if you take the service delivery quality and access, DPSA in partnership with Stats South Africa in terms of surveys, Department of Education, Health, Home Affairs, Department of Cooperative Government, Cooperative Governance, National Treasury, etc., and all of the outputs are in the same, in the same line. DPSA leads in partnership with other departments, and there are specific responsibilities in each of those. The seven strategic outputs, the service delivery quality and access, human resource management and development, business processes, systems, decision rights and accountability management, output four, corruption tackled effectively, output five, leveraging ICT as strategic resource and enabler in the public service, output six, labor relations and remuneration management, which includes collective bargaining, negotiations, all of those issues. Output seven, enhancing good governance nationally and internationally. The approach we've adopted in the implementation of the strategic plan as well as the operational plan for the department, we acknowledge that whilst the emphasis of the outcomes-based approach is on doing things differently or doing things in a new way, the department is mindful of the fact that the current gaps and challenges related to service delivery and the overall performance of the public service are not entirely as a result of weak or poor legislative framework, but as a result of a number of factors, including poor planning, misalignment between objectives and plans, weak monitoring and evaluation culture and systems, and poor implementation of the range of public service policy and directives. So the emphasis in the next 4 years is not to do an extensive review or changing to the current legislative environment. It's more trying to ensure that we can implement the current regulatory environment that we find in the public service. The department is therefore of the view that it is still important to continue with and to build upon the implementation of existing projects and initiatives whilst incrementally introducing new methods and approaches to achieving the identified objectives. In particular, the emphasis will be put on entrenching the ongoing basic requirements in relation to policies, systems, regulations, and standard operating procedures, with an increased focus on implementation support to improve compliance, implementation, and accountability. Secondly, to strengthen monitoring and evaluation in the public service, and finally, establishing and operationalizing the anti-corruption capacity within the public service. Priority will be given to key service delivery partners, for example, the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Education, and Health. In fact, Madam Chair, I can indicate at this stage we set up a relationship between the Presidency, National Treasury, Department of Health, and DPSA to put in place a coordinated approach to improving service delivery in health. Progress against the outputs, and that's the major part of the presentation for today. Implementation in the first two quarters of the year, that is from April to August, has been affected by a range of factors, which include, one, the development of the department's strategic plan for 2010-2014, the development of the delivery agreement for Output 12, which involved extensive consultation with the different stakeholders, departments, who will be involved in the implementation of the outcome, budgetary prioritization and allocation, finalization of the DPSA's restructuring process, which was completed and implemented in June 2010. We've had a reshuffle and a rethink in terms of the way DPSA is organized. However, some progress was made in implementing the various projects and initiatives for the financial year 2010-2011, and I'll speak to all of them. Madam Chair, we've acknowledged as a department there's a need for us to intensify a number of our activities to make sure we can deliver by the end of this financial year. So there's going to be greater focus going forward. I'm going to speak to each one of the outputs itself. The first one, two, three, four columns, the first four columns starting from the left-hand side, the matrix, the indicators, the baseline, and targets are for the four-year period, 2010-2014. So the target in terms of server user satisfaction is to be achieved the 75% over the 4 years. The next two columns, which is the project in relation to achieving that particular target, what we're going to do in 2010, 2011, and the progress in relation to that particular 2010, 2011. So, Madam Chair, members, the service users' satisfaction, the current indication is that we have a 58% baseline in terms of user-level satisfaction. That is the accessing government services, and these are benchmarks that we've got from the reports that have been done by a range of service providers. Public Service Commission, including the Stats South Africa, and labor market surveys, those were some of the indicators we used. The target is to improve the level of user satisfaction to 75%. In that sense, for year one, that is 2010-2011, we're going to focus on developing the user satisfaction survey methodology and tools. From there, we'll build on to conducting those surveys, getting the recommendation, developing action plans to implement those recommendations to improve the levels. So it's a process over the next 4 years. But for year one, we're going to focus on the survey methodology and the tools. In that regard, continuous work on the refinement of the survey methodology is currently underway with Stats South Africa and a range of departments that we're going to survey. We've commenced with the development of data collection tools, and we've held various meetings with Stats South Africa. Stats South Africa will partner with the Department of Public Service and Administration to run these surveys for us. In terms of access to government services, what we want to achieve as an outcome over the 4 years is a maximum distance traveled to obtain a service, to define that maximum distance, and also to come up with a model to assist people to access those services. So it's both the distance that one needs to get to a service, and secondly, how do people get there? It was an issue raised by the president in Cabinet Lahutla, where he says you can put up an office 5 kilometers away from somebody, but if the person lives in a valley, when it rains, it's flooded, the person can't get out of there. How does one ensure that the services are accessible to them? So it's the issue of working in collaboration with Department of Transport, Human Settlement, DP. So it's quite an integrated approach that we're looking at going forward here. In that regard, Madam Chair, for the projects of 2010-2011, we want to develop and progressively implement transversal programs of improving. We're currently working on drafting guidelines in relation to improving geographical access to service points, also developing regulations that support the rollout of guidelines, meetings conducted with Home Affairs and Labor on the work plan, and we've established collaboration with SAPS, SASA, and Education on the development of geographic access norms, which will give us some benchmark in terms of the distances of current services that are provided. We will then use all of that to ensure that we establish norms on maximum distance travel to obtain a service, and we're currently drafting the norms in that particular process as well. The project at the bottom, the CDWs, we're using the CDWs also as a means to assist us in giving further information, but at the first thing we want to do for this year is to ensure there's a very clear policy and regulatory environment in relation to CDWs, community development workers. The first draft of the regulations and directives have been developed, and we are in consultations with provinces in finalizing that particular policy document. Continuing with access to government services, the next indicator is to increase in development and implementation of service delivery improvement plans, focusing on value for money. In this case, we want to ensure that 90% of all departments have service delivery improvement plans in place, and there is a clear focus on the optimum utilization of the funds that have been allocated. The project for 2010-2011 is to coordinate departments to develop service delivery improvement plans, to include and address the principle for money for value principle, to partner with communities to establish forums for monitoring. And we've started that process, Madam Chair, I'm sure you're aware of that in terms of the service delivery improvement plans and the forums to monitor. Departments are in the process of submitting their annual progress reports on the service delivery improvement plans. Official follow-up for non-compliance will be made by the end of July, and that process is ongoing. Ongoing support provided to national and provincial departments to strengthen the quality of their plans that we see on the table. We're also looking at improving the working culture in relation to Batupile amongst public servants, And in this regard, we're cascading and rolling out of the Batupele Change Management Engagement Program across the three spheres. This particular program includes local government in the work we do. In fact, much of the focus at the moment is local government. We're also arranging the Batupele Impact Awards ceremony, which will be held, I think, in the latter part of November, if I'm not mistaken. So that will be in Mpumalanga in November. We've conducted thus far, in terms of progress, 11 training sessions have held between April and June in 6 provinces covering 4 municipalities, 2 provincial departments, and 3 national departments. A total of 306 people took part in the training sessions. We've drafted an integrated framework in the process, and that is in the process of being finalized. Ongoing consultative process taking place to ensure alignment and synergy with other excellence awards that include the VUNA as well as the Premier's Excellence Award. The Premier's Awards are normally the provincial awards that take place. We also want to ensure there's an increase in departments who develop service standards. And in this particular activity for 2010-2011, we're going to focus on coordinating all departments to develop service standards based on mapped business processes. There's a draft concept, project concept, charter and plan developed and submitted for approval. The consolidation and the analysis of the finding of the previous work is ongoing. Some very specific indicators, Madam Chair, is to increase the distribution of Know Your Service Right as part of making the citizens aware of the services that are available and how can they raise complaints and difficulties in terms of those services they receive. Is to increase the distribution of Know Your Service Rights booklets to citizens to facilitate access. And in this case, we want to ensure at least 50,000 copies are distributed during the stakeholder engagement activities. And 100,000 booklets, excluding Z-cards, will be distributed to GCIS, CDWs, and offices of the premiers in all provinces. Progress in this regard, 26,975 booklets and 7,090 Z-cards have been distributed in 17 community outreach events during this period. With regard to responsiveness in relation to Output 1, we want to improve the waiting times for pensions, for the receiving of pensions in hospital queues, licensing centers, and social grants. And in this regard, the project for 2010-2011 is to develop standard for waiting times for pensioners, hospital queues, and licenses. So in other words, setting the benchmark as to what should be the norm in the public service for the next, and then we can monitor, track, and improve going forward. The following departments have been contacted to take part in this work: social development, transport, labor, health, and home affairs. A template was sent to these departments with a request to provide information. It is envisaged that all the listed departments will be visited so as to begin the work as to actual deliverables by end of August. Further on Output 1, one of the areas we believe is very, very important in terms of improving service delivery quality and access is to improve delegations in the public service. I'm sure all of us are aware that the delegations in terms of the Public Service Act, as well as the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, is located at the level of executing authorities and accounting officers. In terms of the PFMA at accounting officers level, in terms of the Public Service Act at the level of executing authority. And many of those have not been delegated beyond that. So we want to come up with a template for both HR and financial delegations and support the departments in the customization and implementation. And this is one of the work we're going to do extensively with health. The view is health that many of these delegations to fix a hospital window, and these are debates and discussions that have been around for a long, long time. Before you fix that window in a hospital, you need to get permission from the provincial head office. And we're saying that just doesn't make logic. We need to ensure that those delegations are at the right place, allowing the CEO to make some of these decisions and allow funds to be at that level. It's a similar process that was done in schools, you know, Section 20 and Section 21 schools, in a sense, in terms of the Schools Act. In this regard, Madam Chair and members, the project for 2010-2011 is to draft a generic HR and financial delegations template. and to apply that template in departments of health, both provincial and national health. So we will assist them in customization and implementation in the Department of Health. And as you said, we've set up the project team to take that forward already. Letters have been addressed to national department, offices of premiers and provincial treasuries have been sent, and we are in the process of following up on information gathering in this regard. And we've set up a special project team with the Department of Health, led by the National Department of Health, the Presidency, led by the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, DPSA, and National Treasury. So that work is on track. The next area we're looking at in terms of service delivery and quality access is the value for money. We want to ensure we can establish competitive unit costs of selected services. The problem statement in this regard is that to build a classroom varies from one province to another or from one region to another. And we're trying to understand why is there such a huge difference in the cost of constructing a classroom and why the differences. Or the cost of, as well as the cost of some other services, pharmaceutical services, hospital services. So there's a range of services we're looking at as to why is there a huge difference in the cost of those services between districts, between provinces. So we want to establish what is what should be the norm to guide procurement processes in departments. So the starting point is to develop and prioritize baseline information for unit cost of key services with relevant stakeholders and coordinate the setting of targets to improve unit costs in year one. In this regard, the project charter and project plan developed and approved letters sent to the departments requesting status quo on methodology and approach to unit cost determination, and we've commenced with the desktop research. The next area with regard to output one is looking at organizational transformation. The overall indicator is to the development of generic sector-specific organizational structure. Again, Madam Chair, the problem statement in relation to the organizational transformation is the difference in terms of the norm between administrative staff and actual professional staff. For example, in the Department of Education, the cost that we spend in relation for your teachers versus the support staff for the teachers. In hospitals, your admin staff, support staff versus the professional nurses, doctors, and so on. In some hospitals, we find the norm being for every three support staff that you have in a hospital, you have one professional staff. And it should be more the other way around. You should have one support staff for three professionals, in a sense. So we want to correct those, and we want to ensure that we have some generic sector-specific organizational structures. And in this regard, we're going to work specifically with health. We're going to look at education as well as social health, social services. We've already commenced the process of the generic structures for health. We've completed the work in Mpumalanga Department of Health. We've come up with a generic structure for the Mpumalanga Department of Health, and we're now extending that work to cover all provincial departments of health. We're going to develop, we've also got a draft generic structure for social development, and that's also in one of the provinces that we've done, and we want to extend going forward. In this regard, we work closely with the offices of the premiers together with the ministries. The Minister for Public Service and Administration, we're also looking at reviewing the directive, the Organizational Design Directive, as part of strengthening the quality of organizational structures, and the terms of reference has been developed in consultation with the offices of the premiers as well as National Treasury and within DPSA is currently underway. Moving to Output 2, which looks at human resource management and development, this is quite an extensive area that one has to focus on. The first area we're going to look at is around performance development, performance assessment, and performance management in total, so the agreements and the assessments as well. We want to ensure over this period of time that 100% of senior managers comply with the signing of performance agreements. We've still not reached that target as yet. The baseline as of the last count was 54%.
Sorry, can I just wonder, does members want to ask per area, or should we allow the presentation to be done, all of it, or do you want maybe to do some interventions in terms of asking questions. Finish. Okay, sure. All right, proceed.
Thank you. There's two aspects to this particular indicator. One is the actual compliance, and the second part of it is the quality of those performance agreements. We also want to set indicators to measure the quality of the performance agreements itself. So for year one, our focus is going to be on the monitoring, report, and enforce compliance regarding the signing of performance agreements for SMS. By that, simply we mean, we've got a baseline of 54%, which was last year's figure. We're going to do an analysis as at the end of, by 31st of May, all of them should have signed. A number of departments, because of the outcomes-based approach, have requested for extension. Many of that extension expired in around end of July. So we're going to do an assessment now to find out how many have signed and then enforce compliance. By enforcing compliance, the public service regulation provides for if you do not sign your performance agreement by the date stipulated, you do not qualify for pay progression and for an award in that year. It doesn't mean you cannot be assessed. You still got to be assessed, but you cannot receive the award and pay. So we're going to enforce those issues. In part of our assessment in the South African Police Services, they achieve a compliance rate on an annual basis close to 98-99% every year because they enforce that compliance. They do not pay managers pay progression in the year that they do not sign. So we want to find a mechanism to take that forward. We've liaised in this regard, Madam Chair, we've liaised with the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation on the alignment of the heads of department's performance agreements. Linked to the minister's performance agreements as well as linked to the delivery agreements. We sent out a circular to departments informing them on how to get that done, and we are working with departments for that alignment. As I indicated, we're also working with departments that have not completed their work and granted extensions where necessary or where required. The second indicator around performance management, we want to have an improved quality of performance management and implementation thereof. That is aligned to institutional performance and the payment of incentives. It's interesting to note the baseline that's currently in the public service. Approximately 95% of employees receive pay progression. On average, 40% of employees receive performance bonuses. On average, and this is a figure of 2008-09, 80% of national DGs, those that were assessed, received a performance bonus. And we're saying that should reflect a very, very well-performing public service. At the level of which those bonuses are paid. As the target we want to take forward, we want to have a revised and improved PMDS system that is aligned to the outcome-based approach, and payments of incentives are aligned to the performance of the department or the institution, and we want to see a normal distribution in the public service. In other words, only between 20 and 25% should receive bonuses, and 80% maximum should receive pay progression, for a department that is performing at a satisfactory level. So that's the normal curve. In that regard, we've started the process, and this year we want to look at reviewing and drafting a revised PMDS for the SMS. And the SMS focus is going to be on the alignment between individual performance and institutional performance. In this regard, there is a draft discussion document, and we're currently engaging with a range of players in this regard to finalize the document for implementation early next year. Another area that was raised, and this comes directly from the performance agreement signed between the President and the Minister, an indicator to improved management of poor performance of DGs, DDGs, and municipal managers. And in this regard, we want to look at developing a draft strategy for improving the management of poor performance of DGs, DDGs, and municipal managers for consultation in this year. But the overall target is to ensure that 80% of identified poor performing senior managers either supported and or sanctioned within 6 months. The purpose of sanctions either to take them through an incapacity code process in terms of either saying the individual is equipped for that position or is not, and either to release the individual or to place the person in an appropriate level thereafter based on that process. So we're saying we need to start that particular engagement. Very little progress at this stage except to say we've started the engagement. Madam Chair, around recruitment, retention, and career pathing in the public service, the indicator in this regard is the improved recruitment in identified occupational categories and associated vacancy rates reduced. Interestingly, the baseline at the moment is specific categories we still need to determine, but the overall professionals and managers, the current vacancy rate on the PERSAL system, and this is the PERSAL information, is 40.9%, and SMS is at 19%. But I want to emphasize the fact this is information extracted directly from PERSAL, and we all know that the PERSAL information is not the best information in this regard. There is a specific project which I'll speak to later which deals with PERSAL cleanup to get these figures corrected. The average rate of vacancy we want to see in the public service is around 10%, and that's our target. The projects for 2010-2011 is going to focus on analyzing HR plans and in consultation with relevant departments determine the occupational categories. Here we want to look at those specific professional occupational categories that we want to fill, the categories we're having difficulties in filling. We want to assess why and what can we do to improve the filling of those vacancies. A good one is the positions of pharmacists in the public service. There's a huge vacancy in pharmacy at the moment. We need to develop a strategy to improve ability to fill those vacancies. In that regard, we've already started the analysis of submitted HR plans. Is underway to determine trends related to recruitment and retention. This will assist in identifying occupational skills category that will be focused upon. The second indicator in regard to recruitment, we're going to look at the increased duration of employment period per post level for SMS aligned to achievement of competency requirement. The key focus here is to ensure that we have a stable SMS that meets the minimum requirements prior to moving to a higher post. We want to prevent this idea of job hopping, people moving too fast through the system. So the idea is to ensure that we have the appropriate competencies defined per post level. So before an individual is promoted to a higher level, they must demonstrate they have the competencies for that higher level post. For 2010-2011, the focus is going to be on the analysis of existing national and international practices in this regard and to start drafting a policy. So consultation with relevant stakeholders still needs to be done. At this stage, there is monitoring of the implementation of the competency assessments by departments to see the trend in terms of are departments using the competency tests as a guide in terms of appointment or recruitment in the public service. Continuing with recruitment, the next key focus area is going to be around the period it takes us to fill vacancies in the public service. Currently, it takes us an average of 9 months to fill vacancies from the date of advertising, that is. It's not the date of which the vacancy becomes known. We want to reduce that to 6 months to fill funded vacancies from the date of becoming vacant. And in this case, we've identified two key indicators, that funded vacant positions are advertised within 2 months of becoming vacant, and secondly, it must be filled within 4 months from date of advertisement. So that's the period we're looking at. Commence with the development of a draft strategy is the work we need to do in 2010-11 and to reduce the period to fill the vacancies. And we want to support some departments, and we'll use the public management watch as an indicator to show which are the poor performing departments in this regard, to focus on those departments to improve the norm and get the figures correct. We've already completed an initial investigation into the recruitment practices in the public service, and we've developed a set of recommendations which we are considering to assist. Part of the work that's also going to look at our current acting arrangements in the public service, because the idea is you should only appoint somebody to act in a post when you're sure you're going to fill the post, rather than prolonged acting in the public service. So there's a review of the acting allowance policy. The vacancy rate at the moment, as the baseline indicates, is around 19.2%. Again, I want to emphasize this is information from PERSAL. It's PERSAL information that's extracted. We want to reduce that to 10%, and we believe that through the PERSAL cleanup that is currently underway, we'll be able to get a real sense of what the vacancy rate in the public service. And my understanding is once we've done a complete cleanup of PERSAL, we'll be able to come very close to the 10% as a clear reflection of what the vacancy rate is, the true vacancy. The machine decided to stop on me. The next area looks at discipline. It's another focus or key focus area that comes up quite often. The major challenge in relation to discipline and discipline management in the public service is the delay in finalizing of disciplinary cases. The current average is around 106 days. The intention is to, over the four-year period, to reduce that to 80% of disciplinary cases finalized within a 60-day period. For this year, we're going to focus on supporting departments in the implementation of the disciplinary code, basically through training and development to showing them how best to manage those codes, how to apply them, training particularly to labor relations officers in terms of discipline management in the public service. We also want to ensure compliance with the timeframes with regard to the disciplinary processes. The timeframe of 60 days and so on is enclosed in a collective agreement and in the disciplinary code in the public service. We've developed a train-the-trainer labor relations module that has been developed, a comprehensive module. We're going to engage with PALAMA as part of the trainers, the training programs on human resource management and development to include this particular module as part of that training exercise. It will include the training for both labor relations practitioners as well as senior managers in the public service, because we believe the responsibility of human resource management, discipline management, is not simply the responsibility of labor relations officers. It's also the responsibility of managers in the public service. So we want to roll that out as well. With regard to human resource planning, skills development, and cadre development, we want to improve the qualitative and quantitative improvement in the extent and depth of skills levels of public servants. And in this regard, we're going to use the HR Connect project as the base to support us in determining the quality and the quantity of skills in the public service. And we will refine and realign the HR Connect methodology to measure the extent and depth of skills levels in the public service. We're still working on the methodology to measure extent and depth. That's an area we need to focus on for this year. The second area is a percentage of public service employees trained in mandatory training program. The next two is a key one where we want to introduce mandatory training program. It's linked to improved competency before you can move to the next higher level. So we want to define the mandatory or compulsory training programs, and we want to introduce compulsory training days for public servants in the public service to enable you to attend these training courses. And then the third area we want to link today, both of the mandatory training program, compulsory training days, and the training budgets of departments are linked, because we want to force departments to use their training budgets for this identified compulsory training program. And most of these training programs will be driven through the PALAMA environment. With regard to employee health and wellness, we want to establish an integrated health risk assessment, and in this regard, together with the DOE and DOH, Department of Education and Health, and other stakeholders, we want to develop an integrated health risk assessment tool. We want to establish partnership for technical support, which will include Department of Corporate Governance, or the OLCOPTA, as well as South African Defense Force. The work thus far is health and safety risks for women, youth, and persons with disabilities were identified to form part of the integrated risk assessment tool. The submission was approved and is currently being integrated into the tool we're working on, and consultation with health and education is currently underway. Around youth, gender, and disability, we want to ensure that departments achieve the targets that are set there, so the idea is to support departments in both developing guidelines as well as the mainstreaming of HIV, AIDS, gender, youth, and disability. And we've also in the process of developing a DVD to support departments in implementing some of these things or assisting them in better understanding and taking them through the process. You'll notice from the progress we've had a range of consultations in the development of these documents. We've also sent out circulars in terms of getting departments to focus on Women's Month in August and for them to conduct programs during the month. And we've also, together with PALAMA, reviewing the current training material that's there to make it much more focused going forward. Then coming to output three, which focuses on business processes, systems, decision rights, and accountability management. And in this regard, the first project we're going to look at is the PASAL functionality, and the indicator is a PASAL cleaned up. PASAL used and the information that's there is of a standard that's acceptable to all of us and can be used in decision-making processes. I think we need to stop using PASAL as an excuse on a number of these issues. This is part of the process. We want to develop and approve of a strategy and a manual to guide the cleanup exercise and to commence with implementation. The PASAL data cleanup strategy has been developed and is currently being consulted, and we're in the process of finalizing the documents for implementation. Organizational design, I think I've spoken to that earlier, as well as the generic sectors. The second key area around the business processes, systems, and decision rights is CETA effectiveness. Around CETA effectiveness, we want to ensure the effective and efficient functioning of CETA. Well, the baseline at the moment is low customer satisfaction at around 61%. That comes from CETA, by the way. The CETA own survey and the figure of 61%. And it's linked also to a number of complaints from departments around value for money and cost effectiveness and so on. We want to improve that customer satisfaction to 81-80%, but it's got to be driven by DPSA in terms of that survey, not an internal CETA survey. The project for this year is the finalization of the turnaround strategy and to commence with the implementation. Thus far, the new appointments to the board has been approved by Cabinet. The CEO was appointed, and the draft turnaround strategy is being considered by the board at the moment. So there's extensive work that's currently underway, and I'm aware of the fact that they've already drafted a draft implementation plan. So they are considering all of that work. Around HR systems that are currently under review, there's two big projects. One is the IFMS, the Integrated Financial Management System. The HR module is the DPSA-specific responsibility, the payroll function, the procurement function, the asset modeling function, the asset register function is National Treasury and other departments, but DPSA is responsible for the HR module. And in this regard, we're going to implement in DPSA and Free State in the next 2 years. And the project that we're looking at for this year is to finalize the generic template and to finalize DPSA implementation. This will include the business blueprinting process, the testing, the training of users, data migration for DPSA, and to commence with Free State Department of Education implementation. We'll complete that project in 2011-12. Progress thus far, the generic template and the DPSA template is plus minus 75% completed and testing has commenced. In fact, we are running parallel processes and we started the process of training some of the users as well. Around HR Connect is to be implemented in all departments. We've implemented in 73 departments to date, and we hope by the end of this year to have completed all other outstanding departments. So all national and provincial departments identified, and we're currently in the process of signing MOUs with those departments. The HR Connect is largely dealing with skills, measuring the skills and identifying the gaps in relation to skills of the various occupations within the public service. Then the fourth output is corruption tackled effectively, and in this regard the indicator is to improve the capacity in relation to anti-corruption in the public service. And there's three specific projects for 2010-2011, the establishment of the anti-corruption capacity to address prevention, awareness, investigation, and conducting hearings. And that's going to be largely driven by DPSA. National Treasury is to lead a multi-agency initiative to tackle corruption in procurement, focusing on identification and prevention, and DPSA to support as part of the disciplinary processes. In fact, we've been supporting SASA, Department of Human Settlements, and a whole range of departments around a number of these practices that involves public servants. We're going to, as part of the IFMS HR module, is to develop a feature to capture financial disclosure forms and other corruption data. And that work is currently underway. In terms of progress, together with BUSA, Business Unity South Africa, training program commenced in July in Mpumalanga and Gauteng. The draft public sector integrity management framework is being consulted upon and is in the process of being finalized. We've drafted a draft public service pledge linked to the public sector integrity management framework. The concept document for International Anti-Corruption Day celebration developed for consultation with the National Anti-Corruption Forum. Communications meeting with GCIS, SARS, and SARS to develop and roll out communication campaign on track, as well as the IFMS HR module has been designed to include capturing of financial disclosure forms and to track disciplinary cases linked to corruption. There's a range of other activities as part of anti-corruption that we deal with that involves both national activities as well as international activities. South Africa has committed itself to a number of international conventions, including the OECD as well as the United Nations on anti-corruption. So we're responsible for drafting those reports and reporting on a regular basis. And this particular slide talks to those specific activities as DPSA. In relation to the level of compliance with international and regional instruments, you'll notice that we've the development of the action plan for phase two reports. It's a phase two of the OECD working group on bribery. And we've completed that. It was adopted in April by the OECD working group. We're currently in the process of developing an action plan to address all of the recommendations identified in that report that we need to close. We need to report on an annual basis to the OECD on this particular work. Moving on to Output 5, which is Labor Relations and Remuneration Management, which is largely the responsibility of DPSA in consultation with National Treasury, but largely in DPSA, and that's one of the difficult areas at the moment. The first key area is the successful conclusion of negotiations. The target is to conclude collective agreements on wages and conditions of service for the current year, 2010-2011, and to commence with negotiations for the next 3 years. The intention is to sign a multi-year agreement for 11-12 up to 13-14. There's a range of projects there in terms of developing and costing the employer offer, obtaining mandates, consultation with various departments, the negotiation process itself. Where are we in terms of progress? The salary negotiations for 2010-2011 have commenced. I'm sure all of us are aware of that, and it's in the media. Labor has declared a dispute and has embarked on a one-day national strike. The latest information is that Labor has rejected the revised offer from the employer last night and have served notice that they intend embarking on a full-scale strike, and that's what we're currently managing in the public service at the moment. The second key area we want to look at around labor relations and remuneration management is to review the bargaining structures and the bargaining processes for the public service. There's been a number of complaints that we run negotiations for 5, 6, up to 9 months in a year, and it needs to be tightened up and strengthened in a sense. Those procedures, as well as the structures in the bargaining council, have never been reviewed since inception, so it's time for us to review that. So we want to see a revised collective bargaining structure over this period, and that work is currently underway. We're hoping to sign a three-year multi-term agreement for the next round, giving us time during this period to start focusing on reshaping the way we operate within the collective bargaining environment and the councils. With regard to the OSDs, the occupational specific dispensations and their implementation, during the course of this year, we want to finalize the implementation of all OSDs, including phase one and phase two. Why we say phase one and phase two, for example, the doctor's implementation, we had part of the implementation last year, and phase two of that implementation kicked in this year. So there's that phase one and phase two. It's a similar process for engineers as well. There's two steps to the implementation. All resolutions thus far have been signed, and we are in the process of implementing all of them. There are some technical difficulties that we are managing, but they are progressing very well at this point. The only outstanding OSD is the health therapeutic services. Labor has not signed that particular agreement, and it's something we need to deal with. The sad part in the collective bargaining environment is that the moment you start dealing with salaries, none of the unions participate in any of the other bargaining chambers. So all that work comes to a standstill while we're dealing with salary. So this one has been delayed as part of that process. Another major area of concern is the review of housing allowance. The focus from our side is to encourage home ownership in the public service. So we want to move away from this debate of simply increasing allowances to become more focused on creating opportunities for public servants to become home owners and create more subsidy levels rather than simply giving an allowance. Because allowances at the moment are simply seen as additional income rather than money to buy property. We're going to conduct research and come up with proposals in this regard. The next area in terms of labor relations and remuneration management is we're going to look at the development of a seamless exit process from the government departments to GEPF. This is a concern raised by the public protector in terms of the period it takes us to pay out from the GEPF, the processing process from the time an individual leaves, the processing by the department, as well as the transfer to the GEPF and the actual payout. We want to try and streamline that and reduce it to at least 30 days in which one gets paid out. It's improved drastically over the past few years, but there are still a number of gaps that we want to close. And as part of that work, we're working closely with the GEPF together with departments to improve that particular process. We also want to improve the efficient management of sick leave in the public service, and we're in the process of collecting relevant data from PASAL to give us a sense of exactly what the problem is and what are the areas in which it's being abused. Output 6 deals with leveraging ICT as a strategic resource and enabler. You'll notice this one is not written in the exact language of the outcomes approach because this is specific to DPSA in terms of the work that needs to be done. The Auditor General, as part of their assessments and audits that they do on a regular basis, they also identify certain areas to do specific audits. They conducted an audit into ICT in the public service, and they've given us a report. Based on that report, they've identified a number of gaps, and the indicators that you see here are closing those gaps in terms of the audit report. The master plan for IT in government, the adoption of an IT security policy to mitigate risks in government, the development of a public key infrastructure strategy, as well as looking at expenditure patterns in the public service. And those are specific projects that we're going to take on board during the course of this year to address. And one of the key ones there is the information security governance framework for the public service. You'll notice that we've started the process. There's drafts in place, and there's some extensive work still need to be done in terms of finalizing those particular activities. The next area we're going to look at is the improvement of the frontline services, and that's particularly in relation to your Tusong service centers, so the old multipurpose service centers, and the connectivity in relation to those Tusong service centers. For this year, we want to connect a further 50 Tusong service centers to the local area network. And we also want to develop a green IT policy for the public service. That's the latest talk on a range of green strategy for South Africa as a whole. Then the final output, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, is the area around enhancing good governance both nationally and internationally. In this regard, we're going to focus monitoring and evaluation across government, and DPSA has a specific role to play in terms of monitoring and evaluation in terms of government services and human resource management and all of those issues, different from the role the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation plays in terms of overall performance of government institutions. We have a specific role from the perspective of human resources and levels of service delivery and ICT and that type of thing. It's linked to the Public Service Act. What we want to do, we have the public management watch in place. We want to expand the public management watch to include indicators that also talks to service delivery and the turnaround times, the norms, and that type of thing, so that we'll be able to track, monitor, and report against those. The terms of reference for the first evaluation has been developed. The project plans have been developed for implementation in 3 Premier's offices. We're also looking at coming up with an M&E policy and implementation support to support departments in to enable them to do their own tracking and monitoring at their own level. And that work is ongoing. In that regard, we're also looking at putting in place guidelines and glossary for terms developed, draft stakeholder needs analysis plan developed, the draft stakeholder participation guidelines revised. All of those documents are already in place, but it's more the implementation and implementation support to departments in the implementation of monitoring and evaluation. We're also looking at improving the capacity development in relation to M&E. With regard to participatory governance, levels of implementation of the APRM National Plan of Action, we've completed the first country report. We're in the process of drafting the second report in terms of the National Plan of Action, and that report will be tabled at the next APRM and AU meeting that will take place in January of 2011. And in terms of the process in that regard, we've spent a lot of time in relaunching the provincial governing structures, and we've spent a lot of time in recapacitating and reactivating the National Governing Council as well. And the drafting of the report is currently underway, and we should be meeting with a range of stakeholders in the latter part of September to consult further on the draft document to be tabled. And that's the second annual progress report in relation to the National Plan of Action. In relation to the international public administration and governance initiatives, we're supporting the DRC consensus project. We're hoping to bring that to a close very soon, but it's taking up a lot of our time at the moment. Facilitation and coordination of the implementation of the Continental Capacity Development Program. We've submitted reports on the Continental Capacity Development Program in the FOP Champions meeting held in Kenya. The minister represented South Africa at the West Central and North African Officials Workshop. We're also facilitating and assisting in the Africa Public Service Impact Awards. Innovation Awards for Africa as a whole. We're driving this particular project through the branch governance as well as the institution CPSI going forward. And that work is quite far advanced. That awards function is scheduled to take place also towards the latter part of November going forward. Madam Chair and members, thank you very much for your time. I know it took long and I tried to rush through some of them. But thank you very much for your patience, and thank you.
Thank you very much for that detailed presentation. Honorable members, I think we had the presentation. Those who couldn't see it because it's got very faint lines, you could see through the overslides. And therefore, I'm allowing this space for interaction, questions for clarity, and any issues that you need to raise. Honorable Dreyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this is a very ambitious document with lots of details, so I'm not going to go through the whole detail asked, so I'll pick up one or two issues and focus on that. One of my favorites is PERSEL. You know, it's been a long, ongoing issue, and it's every year it comes up again and again and again, and no doubt here it is once again. Even in the days of Geraldine Fraser Moleketi, when she was the minister, she acknowledged that the PERSEL system was not reliable and it should be brought, cleaned up, and
so that the data that's contained in the annual reports of the various departments would be the same as in Pershaw. Now, that's going back, what is it, 4 years now? More longer? 5 years? So, you excuse my cynicism and say, well, why is it still here? Why has it been dealt with? And when is the date that I see that you will have cleaned up Pershaw and that we can use Pershaw to rely on? Because it's, again, progress on key activities. It says Pershaw data cleanup strategy developed. So it's just a strategy. We actually now need hard facts. Can you give us a date and say, by the 31st of January 2011, Pershaw will be cleaned up and members of Parliament will be able to click on it and get reliable figures that they can use in the media if necessary, and that we don't have to quibble about it afterwards only if it's not reliable and so on.
Honourable Maluleke. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm lost. I was thinking that the progress report on the strategies, maybe it will reflect, or like when we talk about shortening the time of filling vacancies, maybe they will tell us that we were having so much vacancies, now we have filled this kind of vacancies at this point. So I don't know. On my thing is that we are getting back the strategy that we have. We don't get the progress, according to my thinking. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate this extensive briefing to the committee. Surely some work has been done. And it's work in progress. I must appreciate that. You see, Chairperson, the document itself, I think the strategy is good, but I think I would want to see a situation where emphasis is placed on systems. Because if we can put our systems right, surely most of the challenges that we have would have subsided or eliminated. Because as long as our systems are not right, we'll always go into this vicious circle and give the impression that we don't have the right officials because our systems are not correct. One issue that has been raised, the question of personnel. Our systems, I think, are not right because some provinces are not using PESA. They are using PAS released to another system. So I'm saying our systems must respond to what we want to achieve so that whoever goes and comes in, he should just fill in clearly into the system. That's one issue. So our system seems to be a serious fundamental problem to run our service effectively. To an extent that you can easily trace or track a program through your system if it's correct. But if it's not, and I'm not sure whether we are always on a trial and error approach on this issue of personnel, but that will lead me to a question to ask whether personnel is it the best system in the country, or from your experiences from other countries that you have learned, whether is it the best that can assist South Africa? Well, this issue has been coming for quite some time. You'll remember that there was, in 1998, the headcount trying to enhance PESA. To date, it's not correct. It's not yet there. So I'm saying, whether is it the best approach, this system that we have? The other issue, Chair, I'm still, the other issue that I wanted to say, much that they want to go on the advocacy approach, I want them to be a bit aggressive on this matter. I see that you spoke to your handouts, pamphlets and so on. You stated some figures there. But I would want you to also place an emphasis on the local and national radio stations, especially in vernacular, because you're bringing new approaches and new scenarios. But surely, because I don't want to get, I refuse to get an impression that this is for urban and not for rural, where these services are not easily accessed. You made an example of the president and the roads and the river and so on. But surely our ordinary citizens are not accessing this. That's why your percentage also is not very much good if you look at it. I think you raise it up to 60% in your slide. So I'm saying be a little bit aggressive and vigorous and use the local radio stations and also the vernacular, the language, as a tool so that our people can understand what you want to say or to bring to the fore. So your communication, if you can beef it up. The other issue, Chairperson, coming to human resource. You see, there are various categories that you mentioned. You place the leaves, the disciplines, and so on, the training, whatever he has raised there. I don't know what does it, if I take one category, the discipline. You are saying cases should be dealt with within 60 days, and yet you are taking a little bit longish than that. I'm not sure whether those who are supposed to manage the discipline, where the culture of work ethics is gradually eroding in not all departments. I'll not paint everybody, but surely there are those that are not doing what is supposed to be done. And as such, it seems to me you are not using the tools that you are provided to do that. There are tools, and you are shying away from that. One example, in your case, at your level, the PMDs that you spoke about, right? You are saying only 54% have signed those, and yet, and they requested an extension, and that extension also lapsed. Now, for me, because you are treating those DGs and everybody else with kid gloves, what is your problem not dealing with? Are you not having the tools to deal with our management at that level? Because they are creating a wrong culture for the lower structures. Hence, the level of absenteeism and the leaves thereof are very high. You have not yet interrogated those leaves. Because at your level, as DGs, who are supposed to administer our administrations, you are abdicating your responsibility in dealing with those cases. Why are you not doing that? Why do we talk as if there are no tools to look into what you are saying? The question of Patopile, you raised it as part of it has almost collapsed because our senior managers are not doing what they are supposed to do. You see? So we are talking in circles. And because we must speak as bureaucrats. If you say on this date, as has been raised here, there should be an entry point, clear cut-off date, so that politicians can apply their minds or lawmakers. Let us talk of lawmakers at this level, parliamentarians. If there are gaps in the system in terms of implementing the laws, and you direct us to improve that or to revoke those laws, we should do that. So I'm getting a sense that from as a custodian of the administration, you are not also assisting us in this regard. Can you? Because if you say it has lapsed, and again you have extended, what have you done with those people? Because to make a general statement is not enough. But I want you to deal with the issues head on. Fortunately, in your introductory remarks, you spoke of you must do things differently. Now, are you making them differently, or are you just perpetuating the situation in another form? So I'm saying, Chairperson, I'm sorry to have taken this approach. I'm trying to cut across all this that they've raised. We must do things differently. How different are we from the previous, if I can call it that term, administration? Because it seems to me it's a perpetual, it's just We are not in a paper revolution yet. We need to do things differently, really, substantively. I want to get that from the officials. Then the other matter that you are raising in your plan is a strategy, you know, because it should be informed also by budget. It should be informed by budget. I'm not sure whether, because you speak of value for money. Now, in your strategy, if you, do you have enough budget to implement your vision or your strategy? I'll not go into the cost and so on because I'm not doing the financial oversight. I'm just talking of your budget. To what extent will it impact on this strategy? Because it's a four-year strategy and so on. So I just want to check on that because to implement what these good intentions, surely it must be driven by budget. And if you are not having that budget, what then? It means a new administrator would come because you are acting and he will want to reinvent the wheel and get the same story again. That is my little bit of concern. My last take, Chair, I've got many issues here to raise. Or should I take a pause? Until, because I wanted to go to the three departments that he identified. The question of home affairs, education and health. As key priorities in terms of our own understanding. He did raise them here. I wanted to take a leaf on health. You know, this issue of health is a serious matter in terms of the provision of services, both in human and the facilities or the tools. Where I come from, my constituents, for instance, also the question of the OSD, he touched on that.
Obviously, Honorable Suka, there are too many. The areas that are brought, you won't be able to exhaust all of them. Perhaps if you wanted to say, we can finalize with health, but perhaps we'll look into, if we've got extra time, we can come back to you. Just health.
Chairperson, maybe let I put health aside and come with the one of the labor relations. You see, because I've been listening attentively on all this, because I'm trying to follow page by page on what he has raised, but maybe let I wait for the second round, Chair.
Yeah. We will consider that. Honorable Muhali.
Chairperson, I'm even lost. This Suka.
Honorable Suka.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. My question will be on the performance management. I think we are in August. Are you ready to tell us up to so far how many DGs have signed their contracts up to so far? We are in August. And the other question is on recruitment and retention career pathing. There are some departments, like I'll make an example with Department of Health in Limpopo, where the institution will not advertise for itself its post. The hospital will not be able to advertise the district. They'll all send their vacant posts to the province, and it will take more than a year for that post to be advertised. What interventions do you have for such departments in different provinces if we have to improve on our recruitment and retention? Because you'll have someone who maybe the institution would like to give, to offer a counter offer, but they won't do it without the province. They have to follow all those processes, and the person cannot wait. They'll take up a new offer somewhere. And another thing I've seen here on, there was something about senior managers, what percentage of women and whatever. You said only 5% of departments have reached targets for women's representation at senior management level. And
I can just read. This is English. What is it really that is happening in the department to say that we would like to see the whatever percentage you've put in place? Like you would have the 2% of people with disabilities breaking for so long. So what is it really that you are doing? Because you can shift the target date up to, I don't know where, date to what. But what is it really that you are doing? We don't have people with disabilities at senior management level. We do have people with qualification who can take up that post. Others have been complaining to someone like me to say, hey, I've got my PhD, but I cannot go anywhere. I've been stuck in this department at this level, and it's pathetic. What is it really? Because they are in departments, but there's nothing happening. I'll wait for the second round because I'm lost. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable
Teacher, I think our concerns are almost similar, so I'm just going to try and perhaps be generalized or be shorter. What concerns me about the strategy is that public service and administration has been here since when? Took a days. But the presentation was good. If it was really, really implementable, I'd say we should be a very highly performing department. But what I'm wondering is how implementable is everything that has been put here. My concern is also around the fact that I don't know since when have we been talking about the Tupili principles which were mentioned here. And every time each of the departments or the sub-directorates of the departments, when they come and present here, every time it's about what you are going to do, what you are going to implement, what is still to come. There's never a time, Chair, where you get a sense that this is where we are presently. There's forever new developments about dreams of what's going to happen. And I think it's time now that with things like this, a strategy like this, there should be time frames on each of those outcomes. There should be a budget, which was mentioned, on each of the outcomes that are going to be implemented so that you can get a sense of coming to a conclusion of where there are problems or a decrease of where there are problems. The other issue is that in the light of the fact that it is going to happen, the issue of an integrated public service, how accommodative is the strategy to especially long-term outcomes? How integrated are they in issues of cross-cutting matters like I can see there's priority areas in terms of health, in terms of education, in terms of home affairs. But my concern is overall, being public service and administration in the Republic of South Africa, how well are your programs aligned to possible long-term problems? Those are issues that I would want to raise. And then, Chairperson, when it comes to human resource development and management, once again, the personal issue. I know that perhaps we're still going to meet the people concerned directly with the parcel issue. But I'm also in support of the view that was mentioned earlier that should we now not stop talking of parcel, because I think this thing has been there since before 94. Shouldn't we stop talking about parcel and just indicate what exactly needs to be done in relation to parcel? It's not working. It's a system that's not working. What's good about it, I heard you mentioning something about an IFMS system. It does look like there is something better that could come out of it from what I can gather here, and that is the IFMS system. But I don't know what details are there or comparatives or possible comparative studies or feasibility studies that have been done that would make it possible for us to just once and for all go in the IFMS system. Because in your own document here, there is a clear indication that that would work better than the personal system, also in the light of the fact that we are faced with strikes now. And obviously the issue of the strikes has to do with this very parcel system being wrong. And if there's a problem with that, when we come to labor relations,
What is something that you're going to do differently? In honesty, based on what you said, doing things differently, in honesty, we've been having how many cases per year every time? Going to the bargaining councils, the FCCMAs, and so on. There's a lot of money spent. I think if you recall well, also the department, there was a report from the Public Service Commission that indicates the state of bargainings that are taking place within the public service. It would be nice, Chair, if you could get that report as well. It might not be possible now, but if you could get that report and reflect on that report, because my concern is you have the strategy in place, but how much of that report are you taking into consideration to ensure that you are actually minimizing the number of, in fact, the amount of budget or money spent on these issues of the strike? And the fact that now that they haven't signed or they haven't agreed to what's been given, now my question is the true message really going through? And once again, how implementable is this threat plan then to the whole issue? Also on the human resource development and management areas, our systems are appalling in the departments. They are failing, the systems that are there. I'm not really impressed with what I see here as a strategy that is going to take place, because it's not really addressing the key issues that are related to the actual functioning or operational issues within the department. It's not telling me, it's not giving me a sense that what you are going to tackle here, what we see here, is going to answer the problems that are in the department. I'll give a small example. Human resource development. We've been talking about the workplace skills plan. It's still not being implemented properly. And there's nothing being said in this report in relation to actually addressing the strategy, addressing the problems in correcting the identification of an ordinary audit skill of the public service. We continue to complain about the people being not having enough capacity in the departments. It's not addressing that. It's really not addressing that. Then the last question, Chair, is on the last input concerning the International Public Administration and Governance Initiative. Good. But I'm starting to wonder how much has been spent on this. And that percentage that is being spent here, should it not be re-looked into? I think I once asked this question even previously. But the problems we have generally in public service and administration, I'd really like to first have an understanding of the funding or the costs involved here to just have a look if there isn't a possibility of cutting a bit down on that and concentrating more on the participatory government rather than... I'm not saying we shouldn't have intergovernmental relations or, international public relations, but what I'm saying is, are we perhaps not mixing up our priorities in terms of what should be done and the budget that is spent? I'm interested in the actual percentage of money involved there. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, the last one is Honourable Kalkwick.
Thank you, Chair. Just a short question on CETA effectiveness on page 11 there. Unfortunately, the perception I have is that CETA is bad news. I see that the customer satisfaction is only 61%. Now, I think it's Honourable Bikani who submitted an oral question to the Minister for tomorrow's question session in regards with government departments making use of CETA's services. Now, can you give us an indication of what percentage of government departments use CETA's ICT? Thank you. I think I'll conclude with that.
Can I request that we take a 10-minute break because tea will be cold? Get our tea, come back, and then get responses. I'm sure you've got a handful. You'd come back and do a response. Thank you.
There's hot water and lemon and honey.
Honey.
Yes.
If you can just coming down with something else.
How are you?
I'm well.
I've spoken to your tree. Say, hey, look at your tree. She's worried. You need to brush.
Sugar.
Hello, dear.
This is Monday.
Why do you call Razia at night? No, there are national issues.
No, you shouldn't call her at night. How?
Why should I call her?
No. You there call her during the day.
She is my stomach.
No.
She's my twin. We are born on the same day, same year, same month, same date.
No, I know. Same year is not possible.
So she's my twin. I can phone her at any given time. But you are not allowed, Wena. I am allowed to.
No, you shouldn't call her at night. Ha, Suka. No. Even when he's not supposed to. No, don't call her at
the same date.
No.
No, I went to check with you last night about this meeting. Because I'm not sure. Because I had a long meeting yesterday with sports. And I came, you came out late.
For a week past, I'm not sure.
I wanted to check with him.
But the report that
we
submitted on
Ghana,
did you think it's
the job? Yeah, no, I'm not going to bother myself
with that. We're still going to fix it up.
Okay.
Do everything else, but we're also going to require input from members with regards to what exactly you need to make the country for.
But you know what?
Carmelento, go and she's supposed to get me something. I think you know what? Samamo, when I see to a help over there, I come
home.
There is your suit.
Hello, darling.
Good day.
Oh, is he going to
come?
With acting DJs, you'll never be fine. You'll have someone next month acting.
They could all get Oscar awards for the acting that they're doing.
Oh. this department is in Matat. Come here, Diamond.
Leadership.
Hey. Come at that.
No, we're not.
All the key things that have been addressed that need to be checked are now in the plan, which were not there in January. You can go and take one from January and what we have now. We're not trying to focus on the issues that have been raised on most of these things. But then I'm agreeing with the members in terms of actual
information, but with Batopi, you can do better.
Yes, my dear.
No more lemon and no more honey.
Just can give me bread.
Okay, and would you like maybe some rose tea or something
no
else?
No tea for me.
Why not put a little bit of a
why put regulate the two systems that they are my size. You're not all dressed like a Mayana Kumpumalan.
Well, I'm concerned. Oh, Lella. What are you
crying for? I'm crying for. 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 Because I can't make up a lot of my rabbi Julius. Public protector.
Ja, ik denk dat
Daardie ek is jammer kan ek nie staan nie. Ek wil sê ek wil nog my antwoord. Ek sodra ek dit kry sal ek presies wat weet maar tot nou toe het ek nie gedoen nie.
Mule, go fela se karakela motho ka chocolate batho ba mding. Ha ba tso karakela tsuka chocolate ke le hona. Er o mule ga tsaisa for the thing in the chocolate. Se tsepa se no bua le wena kwa. Tuka, se person ou blele lwe. Se person. Gen ar pete. Rou bon se di nou. Ter mwen la.
Okay, I think we'll proceed. Are you ready for the responses? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members for those questions. I'm going to try and go through each one of them, but I'm going to try and also cluster them in trying to manage some of the responses. I want to preface the input by first acknowledging, yes, if you look at the work, and by the way, that does not cover all of the work DPSA does, so I've just picked up the priority areas and the possible areas that we need to deal with. There's a range of other activities that are there in DPSA. But what we need to acknowledge is that when it comes to human resource management and development in the public service, the responsibility is not DPSA for implementation. We have a decentralized human resource management framework in the public service in terms of the Public Service Act as well as in terms of the public service regulation. The key focus from DPSA side, and I think that's where we're looking at the difference in terms of the way we do things in the public service going forward. In the past, DPSA was simply responsible for writing the policy, developing the framework, and putting it out there, with the hope that departments will take that and apply it correctly and use it correctly and implement it correctly. We are not focused on our attention on supporting departments on the physical implementation of that policy or the guideline or the directive or the regulation. Secondly, DPSA had not played an active role in monitoring the implementation thereof and enforcing and holding people accountable if it's not being done. And I think that's the major difference in terms of the approach DPSA is taking together with National Treasury, COCTA, and other departments in terms of the GNA work going forward. So as part of Outcome 12, the focus is going to be the manner in which we operate. So it's a simple principle. We're not going to simply develop a strategy and say, there's a strategy, go and implement. We're going to hold the hand of departments in the physical implementation of that strategy to a point, and then ensure that we put in place mechanisms to monitor and to enforce compliance. And hopefully through that process, we can also start holding DGs, heads of departments, and senior managers accountable if things are not working. Now, coming back to that issue, we've also, you will note, we've also established a relationship with the Auditor General's Office. In the past, all audit reports were only focusing on finances. The new audit from next year, they've started this year in terms of a preliminary audit process or an advisory award, advisory audit. From next year, there'll be a full audit on performance management as well. So they will be doing a full audit on all requirements in relation to the Public Service Act and regulations. So all of those shortcomings will be identified, and departments will end up with qualified audit statements if they do not comply with all of those reflected. For example, in this year's audit for DPSA. This is one example. As part of the management letter, they even recorded that by a certain date we are supposed to have sent through. It's stipulated in terms of the public service regulation. By a certain date, your annual report and budget statements need to be submitted. DPSA sent it late, so they recorded that as part of their financial, as part of their audit statements to us. So there will be a comprehensive audit statement that covers all public service regulations and act. So we'll be able to pick up those things through those audit reports and track and monitor and report against them. And that will form part of the audit opinion going forward from next year. Coming back to some of the specific issues, the PASAL date, I think around the PASAL one, we're going to come back next week and do a comprehensive presentation on PASAL and the processes and what we plan to do. The approach we're taking around PASAL, the strategy is how we're going to embark on this process of cleanup. And that process is what the strategy is about. But we're going to project manage as DPSA step by step to make sure it happens. And that's the difference. In the past, DPSA will develop the strategy and say, guys, go and clean it up. And therefore, the past 10 years, we've never had a process of cleaning it up. This time, we're going to physically do it. Can I link this to the broader debates around a new system for the public service? The PASAL system itself is an outdated old legacy system. I think we all know PASAL as a system was written simply to pay salaries of public servants. That's all it was done. It was never meant to do HR or give statistics around HR or any of it. We started changing it along the way and built certain fields to accommodate those issues. But it's reached a point where it just cannot grow beyond that. And it's a simply, it's an old legacy system. And the manner in which it's written, you cannot change it any further. So therefore, there's a need to pension that system off and introduce a new one. So the new system we're bringing on board is called the IFMS, the Integrated Financial Management System. And the Integrated Financial System has a number of legs to it. One leg of the IFMS is HR, human resource. And in that regard, Madam Chair, we've already purchased the SAP module. And that's an internationally owned HR module, the SAP module, SAP module. I think quite a few organizations in South Africa use it. It's used internationally, all of that. So we've purchased SAP. It's now, we've got a 10-year contract with SAP. So it'll be updated on an annual basis, modification, all of that. We currently, if you buy the system, it's a generic system. We need now to modify that system for government specific. We're in the process of doing that customization and configuration to make it specific to government and to be specifically aligned to all of the policies and practices in government. So that work is quite far advanced. As I indicated, it's plus minus 75% completed. We're in the process of testing. We're going to pilot it in DPSA, and by November this year, we'll be rolling it out in DPSA. And by July next year, we'll be rolling it out in the Department of Education in Free State. And thereafter, once we've completed those pilot studies, we'll be rolling it out to government as a whole. Once we've completed the rollout of IFMS, we will then phase out all legacy systems, including PASAL. So PASAL's life is going to be out in the next 3 to 5 years, once we've rolled out completely for the whole of government.
Before you pass that, can you maybe clarify, is there a relationship to what you're explaining to an inclusion or involvement of CETA as well?
Yes. You're absolutely right, Madam Chair. There is a very close link between the turnaround of CETA and the IFMS, because your primary systems integrator in terms of the IFMS project is CETA. So CETA will have to be upscaled, redefined, reworked to take over this full responsibility of the IFMS. And they are establishing the capacity. Remember, the moment you roll out a SAP module, you'll need to have the capacity in CETA to manage it, to maintain it, to support it, to do all of that work. So we are building the capacity in CETA to do all of that as well. So that work is there. We're also, by the way, developing our own new payroll system. So we're writing in our own payroll system that will be linked to the IFMS as well. So that work is quite advanced. Maybe we should come in, Madam Chair, with your permission at some stage, do a comprehensive presentation on the IFMS. No, I'm talking about the next week's presentation is specifically on PASAL, but on IFMS and where we're going to in that regard. In terms of the date, the strategy we're going to take is implement the cleanup, how it's to be done, but the departments itself will be involved, and we will support them in the actual cleanup. I doubt it'll be January 2011. The date was going to be more like January 2012 or December 2011. It's going to take us at least a year to do that work, but I don't have the dates in mind at the moment. I apologize. We don't have the figures in terms of the actual vacancies. The program we presented today is the work we're going to do in terms of reducing the vacancies over a period of time, and that work will be on track. And as we report on a regular basis, I'm sure we'll be coming to the committee on a quarterly basis to report against progress. And then we'll be able to give the actual figures in terms of the work we've done and all of those things. I want to indicate also, I mean, quite a few members says we need to have measurable indicators. The measurable indicators are in the documents. We've got comprehensive documents which breaks down every single activity to measurable indicators and the time frames and the budget assigned to each one of those things. So those documents we will be sharing with the committee. We're waiting for it to be signed off by the minister, and we'll be able to submit those. My apologies. Can I also answer the question around the budgets and money to implement all of this? We've done an assessment of all of the projects we have here. Remember, as I indicated, a number of these projects are not done solely by DPSA. It's done in partnership with other departments. Like health will be working closely with us to fully implement all of these issues. National Treasury will be working closely with us. But in terms of DPSA and DPSA responsibility to roll out the projects we saw there, we believe there's sufficient funds in the budgets of DPSA to do that work. As I indicated, the work is done by the departments. It's a process of supporting. But we acknowledge there's two key areas that we may require additional funding, and that's for capacity in DPSA, for new posts and people to be filled so that we can play that hands-on supporting departments. It costs a lot of money to have people deployed to provinces and departments for a long period of time to handhold and to support departments in implementation. So that's going to require some cost, and we've put in a request to National Treasury for money for the posts and for additional S&T in relation to transport and accommodation and so on. And the only other area that we're going to look for money in the short term is the anti-corruption capacity that we want to develop. The intention around the anti-corruption capacity in DPSA is to ensure we have sufficient people in DPSA to physically do the hearings, the investigations, and the sanctioning. So we want to take over some of those responsibilities from the department in supporting them into doing it. So hopefully we can meet the timeframes. So that, again, is another area of doing things differently. We're going to physically do the hearings on behalf of departments. And that we've asked for money as well. This one, for example, the IFMS, although DPSA is responsible for the HR module of IFMS, we don't spend a cent on it except for the project management of it. The entire project is funded by National Treasury. So the money comes from National Treasury to do that, and we drive the project. Madam Chair and honorable members, I think what I'm doing is just trying to cluster in terms of the response. And we've identified health as one of those key partners that we want to work with in the implementation of all of these issues, whether it's on organizational structure, whether it's on improving service delivery and the time, turnaround times, whether it's to deal with the filling of vacancies, performance management, all of these issues, value for money and so on, all of those issues we've identified. We're going to put them into a single project and work with Department of Health in the implementation of all of those issues, including the delegations aspect and so on. So that way we can test whether these strategies are working, whether the policies are working, and is it making a difference. So we don't want to say we want to stretch our resources and cover all 143 departments simultaneously. For this year and early next year, we want to focus on health as a single department so that it's easy to see returns in terms of the work we're going to do, and then expand it to cover education and other departments. So we're going to put in place a very focused, structured approach in the way we need to do things within the limited resources and time. We take the comments around know your service rights and using local radio stations in the communication. I think that needs to be briefed on. I know that know your service right comes in a number of languages, but there are still gaps that we need to close. Unfortunately, I don't have the specific details around how many DGs have signed their performance agreements. We'll come back to the committee with that. All DGs are expected to complete their performance agreements and lodge it with the Public Service Commission. So it won't be too difficult for us to make a call to the Public Service Commission to get the number that is lodged at a certain date. The issue around the delays in the filling of vacancies, in the particular example about Limpopo and some other prong where they centralize all filling of vacancies. So what they normally do is a department waits for all departments to submit their details, and they issue a vacancy list, I think, every quarter. And that results in delays in the filling of vacancies. Now, remember, part of our work here is to develop a template for the delegations. We want senior managers as CEOs of hospitals with a fixed budget to be able to replace people in terms of their needs and hold them accountable. So that's part of the delegation of HR and financial responsibilities going forward. I think we've agreed, and in previous presentation, I think I've done some of this in the past, we've failed as the public service in meeting the targets around gender targets and women in senior management, as well as women targets in the rest of the public, as well as people with disability. So the strategy now going forward is we've identified some departments that were able to achieve those targets. We're now working with those departments to find out what is the strategy they used in meeting those targets. We've also established relationships with disability, what's it called, DPSA as well, Disabled People's Association of South Africa. We've also established relationships with them to try and ensure that they give us a supply of people as well in terms of meeting this. We're also working with PCETA in all of our learnerships and internships that we're going to bring in. We're going to put targets in terms of people's with disability, persons with disabilities, as well as women, so that we can manage the training and development and have a pool of people we can draw from in the public service. So there's a number of strategy and thinking that we want to put in place. But I agree, we can write all of those strategy. But if there isn't the commitment and will on the ground to employ, it's going to lead to challenges. But again, as I said, as part of the Auditor General's performance audit, he's going to report on that. And departments will end up with qualified reports for not meeting targets. And they're going to be held accountable for those things. So hoping that will make a difference going forward. As I indicated, there are some of these things. I indicated in my introduction as part of the implementation, the intention from our side is not to look for a whole-scale review of the legislative and regulatory framework. We believe the regulatory framework needs refinement in certain areas, for example, around discipline and the recruitment process. But it doesn't need to replace or change all of those things. It needs the full implementation of those policies that we have in place. And the focus is going to be on supporting departments in the full implementation of those policy environment and regulations that we have in place. There are some gaps, and we will close those gaps. And we welcome the support of the members of the portfolio committee. And if we identify gaps, we will be taking it through the committee as well as through cabinet processes in terms of closing those legislative and regulatory gaps that we do find as we go along. The integrated public service or the single public service is back on the agenda. As DPSA, we're going to start an extensive consultative process leading up to tabling in Parliament by latter part of next year. So we're looking at another year of consultation and processes. So we believe that the work that we're doing here, the strategies, the policies, the will be easily accommodated when we have the integrated public service as well. Because the issue around performance management and development, the issue around service delivery, the issue around vacancies, are issues that are not peculiar to the public service. You also find the same problem in local government. So the strategies and the development, you can always extend it to include local government. You'll notice that some of our work that we're doing also extends to include local government. For example, municipal managers and their performance. So there is some element of integration, and we're trying to cover some of that work going forward. The report on disciplinary cases, we'll definitely take that into account, look at the recommendations, and as part of our strategy, see how we can start closing all those gaps to improve the manner in which we're working. The workplace skills plan, human resource planning, it's a major part of our work. The work is ongoing. We've completed and submitted an HR planning report for government in terms of skills and skills level. We're working with departments improving the quality of the HR planning, because the foundation to ensuring that you have the right people in the right place and the numbers is to have a proper HR plan that addresses your supply and demand as you're going along the way. So we are working very closely with departments around that. The quality of workplace skills plan and HR planning is improving, but it's very slow. We're trying to fast-track some of that. Now, part of the HR planning includes the employment equity targets, the setting of the targets, the reporting against it, and so on. So that is happening. As I said, I didn't mention there, but it's definitely one of those key projects that's on track. The issue around international activities and priorities. I've just got some figures here quickly. In the last 4 years, on the DRC, we spent something like approximately 40 million rands. But the 40 million rands didn't come out from DPSA budget. It comes out from what we call the African Renaissance Fund. It's a fund that's in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, DERCO. Yeah. Then we also, the number of the capacity building projects that we run in the rest of Africa, in South Sudan, we've ran a couple of projects, even in the DRC or even in other parts of the African continent. Many of those capacity development programs are donor-funded money, CEDA, GTZ, and so on, that support certain drives. So it's not departmental funds that are used to fund us, except the cost of the personnel, the people, to do that. So, yes, we've spent some money on international, but a large chunk of it is comes from outside DPSA budget itself. I want to indicate, though, but if you've noticed the international program of DPSA over the last couple of years, there's been a drastic shift away from international activity. It's different from the old days. There's a shift in the focus, and the focus is more internal these days, which is good. The interesting thing on OECD, on UNCAC, the United Nations Committee on Anti-Corruption, the OECD Working Group on Bribery, the International Labour Organization, and so on, South Africa as a country has signed those conventions. And as part of that signing, we are obliged to report against them. So therefore, we have to participate in all of those activities. But they don't cost a lot of money in terms of, it's more the internal coordination and the reporting. And it's normally on an annual basis that we participate there. Around CETA effectiveness, unfortunately, we tried phoning to find out exactly what percentage of departments use CETA ICT. I don't have that information on hand. But that's something we need to report on. And I think the CETA turnaround needs to be treated as maybe a special presentation as well, because that's quite an extensive piece of work that is being done in CETA effectiveness and CETA turnaround and all of those issues. But the CETA effectiveness is one of the key areas that we're focusing on as part of the governance and administration cluster work, as well as DPSA as a department, to turn CETA around. And as I said, from our side, we also play a central role in terms of the IFMS in refocusing the energies of CETA as a primary systems integrator in the public service. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, honorable members, I know that you are really eager to proceed with many other questions. Maybe we can take one, but at the moment, what I just needed to just flesh on, because I may not even get into the issues of questions, but I'll suggest also how best are we going to work on ensuring that all those areas we are looking into them. The very first one is that some of the questions or some of the issues that are part of this presentation will be responded further by the committee meeting that is coming, particularly on PESA. And we're hoping, because it's two departments, Treasury will be there as well, and our department, we might be able to get further detailed information on PESA, because as we know, it is our area of interest as a committee and the issues that are put forward. But also, The issue that the members raise about the signing of performance contract, perhaps it's just coordination of information, because what I know, and also the, do they call them ATCs that are already out in other papers, the issue, that very same issue is asked on the, and we're expecting a response by tomorrow. So you, in fact, if there was coordination of information, you could have as well answered it. Otherwise, it then means that it might go to the House tomorrow not to read about the signing of performance contracts. So the knowledge is there, perhaps it's just coordination within the department, because no ways that it can be answered in the House tomorrow. It was just a minor expectation from you. Okay, and then, but other issues, of course, I think I just have to emphasize that part of what we requested tomorrow, for the coming committee meeting on Tuesday, seeing that both ministers for finance and for public safety and administration will be there, we also requested that CETA be included based on when we did the oversight visit, we realized how much involved CETA is in the person. So it is part of PESA as well. In a big way, we saw that. So as a matter of fact, CETA should be there as well on that coming. We have communicated that quite clearly, and we expect it's there so that we can see and understand that integration. I know you talked about Statistics South Africa. Possibly they would see the ministers, you know, because we know that they're going to meet before they go to the meeting next week, so that when they go there, they actually bring responses rather than, you know, speaking unsynergized language that might make us to have a lot of questions. We are actually expecting a lot of answers on this area, and I'm made to believe that it's going to be that way, actually, in terms of the communication. Okay, I won't really get into details, but I just want to indicate that in terms of all issues, to be thorough, as the committee, most of them are going to do oversight. It's best when we get there, we see. Some of the oversight that we'll do with the department will be prearranged, but there will be a lot of unarranged, you know, not arranged, so that we're able to sort of, it depending on the area that we'll be looking into. For some of them, when we say you are coming, then you prepare yourself and you sort of put flowers and all other stuff. Some of it you will look into those flowers, which is fine, but some of this doesn't need us to tell you. And some of it will be assisted by other committees when they do oversight on other areas. You know, we'll also request them to look into these areas, you know, because that's how we're going to work as committees in Parliament. We're going to have an interaction that actually impacts to all our work. So some committees, when they are, even if it's not us, someone else doing it, they must also come and tell us in maybe areas that we've identified them to look into. They come and give us a feedback, so that it will be in those three other areas, and definitely will come back in a form of an oversight, particularly in those areas that you have identified. You have already presented the priorities. You did that before. You are doing it today. That before us here, we'll hold you accountable based on these issues. I do agree. Somehow I just feel it is ambitious, but it's good if you're ambitious to actually deliver to this extent. We'll hold you accountable to that. That's our task, actually. If there are urgent questions, Honorable Buchanan's hand was up. We can take just one or two, and then we can then round up and close. Honorable Buchanan?
No, Chair. Mine is just a small comment, which I think it must now reach a conclusion. Ever since I've known DPSA here in Parliament, it's always had an acting DG. Could you please now come to a conclusion about that? And my worry based on the fact that it was somebody else the last time, it's somebody else this time with the strategy. The next time we come and they are coming to correct their strategy again with us, we might find another DG who will come with other approaches to the whole thing. Could they please bring this acting DG thing to a conclusion and give us a report as soon as possible? Thank you, Chair.
Obviously, we are not expecting you to respond. You won't have an answer to that one. If the minister was here, perhaps. Honorable Dreyer?
Madam Chair, just on that point, with all the acting DGs and all the acting other people we have, I think we should all give them some Oscar rewards. All the acting that they do.
You see, if people are acting, you know, there will be an initiating of an award. So it means it must come to an end before the award comes. Okay. Honorable members, I think in terms of this one, we can't say we've exhausted it. We have just done what we could at this point in time. We will further interact with this because it's the priority areas of a department that we're overseeing, which actually does a cross-cutting work, just like our committee. So we're going to continuously interact with this. It will come in various forms. We will ask the department in various ways in terms of coming back, and we'll appreciate that. I know there is an attempt. Every time there's a presentation done, it focuses on the area, and it also shows us budget thereof. You know, say, for instance, next week we'll be dealing with this presentation. For a fact, it focuses on priority number 12, and it should also go along that way so that we're able to see that there's work taking place. We really appreciate, and I'm sure you have noted our concern about consistently not submitting on time, and we expect the department to do something about that. Okay, so I think with the department we've came to an end of the presentation, but now we still have some minutes in front of us to consider. Before the minutes, like I indicated, I'll just have to emphasize that we have circulated a report which will engage with it after some time. If members feel that they want it to be drafted in a particular way, at this point in time, you're free to do that. You know, look at it, and then if you feel that, you know, you think it should do in a particular way, you can look at it in that particular way. At the moment, there are minutes that had been presented before the committee. Can we present the minutes? Okay, let me give you the date of the minutes. Yeah, you up? Yeah, you're released, department. You can. Thanks. You can? Okay, great. Yeah, we are released, and thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to ask if you can please excuse me. I see the meeting was scheduled until 12:30, and I do have another appointment at 12:30. And I then take it that we're not going to discuss the draft reports on the Indonesian and Ghanaian visits. Not today. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'll please excuse me.
Okay. Can I just indicate if it's 12:30, is your watch saying it's already half past?
It's not quite.
Oh, okay. No. But we understand you can be excused. We have presented the meeting for... Okay, Honorable Drea, if you are really leaving now, it means we can defer the minutes to the next meeting because we're not constituting a quorum. It's not a big problem. We can. It would have been good just to pass over the issue of the minutes because they were actually circulated well in advance. Okay. Okay, here is a copy of the minutes, Honorable Member. It's on the 2nd of June. With all those who are present, page 1 for presentation, with the belief that members did read the minutes because they submitted. Page 2 and page 3. Is there any mover for, is there any correction?
No.
Any mover for the adoption of the minutes? Okay, Honorable Fanskalsweg is moving. Any seconder? Honorable Maluleke is doing that, and thank you very much, members. Yeah, that was the only item remaining, and thank you very much, members. The minutes are adopted, and then we'll start from this meeting moving forward. It was a fruitful meeting. We appreciate that, and we hope we'll continuously embark on that. Next week, members should go look into issues that relate to the committee on PESAL. Yes, we had others who have been raised in the meeting now, you know, and then we are able to engage with it, including our Public Service Commission and Parliament votes that were collapsed. We are hoping next week's meeting will bring a solution or give clarity in terms of what's happening. Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you.
There's another acting CEO being appointed for CETA. again.